Welcome to American Variety Radio. I'm your host, Court Lewis. You know, the theme of American Variety is actually an anti-theme, anything but politics. So occasionally I've done shows that have political implications, but in all these years I've never done a show directly dealing with party politics. Partly my aversion to that topic is that the airwaves, particularly on AM radio, are full of propagandizing political extremists and blowhards. But also, once you start, you're pretty much forced to go to one extreme or the other. There's no middle ground anymore in the political landscape. As I think everyone would agree, politics has become more and more divisive and ugly. The internet has fed this to the extent that the right and the left have become basically warring tribes. I even use those terms, right? It's gotten to where it's beyond just uncivil, but actually takes on the character sometimes of almost like mob behavior. It's weird to say, but it's not inconceivable anymore to envision something like civil war in the future. I mean, it's just gotten that hardwired, this polarization, and it's scary. We need to begin, I think, to find the center again. So I'm going to break my own policy with this show and talk with someone who runs a website and blog called The New Moderate, Politics and Civilization for the Passionate Centrist. His name is Rick Byam. Welcome, Rick.
Hey, Court.
Thanks for being on. So the website is newmoderate.com, spelled just like it sounds, newmoderate.com. You know, Rick, I'm mindful of the saying, fools agree. And so I felt kind of foolish as I read your material and found that I was agreeing with nearly everything you say on it in your website, and it's a pretty extensive website. Once back in the late 90s, I submitted a prospective op-ed piece to the Washington Post that I called The Passionate Moderate. This is like 20-some-odd years ago, right? And I never even heard back from them, and your writing really reminded me of that article. So let's start by going back in time some. There was once a progressive party formed in 1912 by Theodore Roosevelt, which was also called the Bull Moose Party. Was Roosevelt a moderate, in your view?
He was a fascinating character because he was anything but a moderate in terms of his personality. I mean, he was a fanatic. He never did anything halfway. He loved war. He loved killing animals. A bundle of energy. You could almost say he was manic. But politically, he was a true moderate. I've listened to some of his speeches on YouTube, and it's a fascinating experience to actually hear him speak. He was slightly liberal in the sense that he favored the interests of what we used to call the common man against big business. He was against the spread of, you know, big business interests and their influence on politics, just, you know, the same situation we have today. He called himself a trust buster. In other words, like when companies grew too powerful, this was the Gilded Age, after all, when capitalism was really flourishing and there were really no safeguards against the influence they had. He gave a number of speeches in which he said things like he trusts the wisdom of the American people, you know, before he would trust the elites in society. So, I mean, he sounds almost like a Democrat that way, but he was a sensible moderate, too. He gave a speech about comparing our politics to an example he used was the French Revolution, how it swung wildly from the days of the monarchs who were reactionary to the excesses of the French Revolution and then back again to the monarchy. You know, he cautioned us against that, you know, something we definitely have to avoid. And yeah, it's applicable today because, I mean, you can see the pendulum swings in America. I mean, we just can't seem to settle in the middle.
The pendulum swings wider and wider with each swing, it seems like.
Yeah.
It used to be, you know, my memory goes back a ways, as I imagine yours does too, and it used to be that Republicans way back, let's say in the 50s and the 60s, were generally prosperous, I think, you know, in general, stuffy, moral, socially and fiscally conservative people. You know, they were like bank presidents and business owners and so on, and their wives were, you know, the cliche was that they favored a good cloth coat over mink stoles and
right.
That kind of thing, right? So
yeah, that was Nixon, yeah.
Yeah, right, so... You know, and then Democrats, you know, and again, I'm generalizing here, right? But generally were blue collar and less wealthy and often ethnic and often urban. And so it was kind of like the owners and managers versus the workers in a way, in a sense. That flip-flopped in the early 80s when Democrats...
Even before that, I'd say it goes back to the 60s.
Okay.
LBJ and his Great Society, which for the first time included black people in his vision. You know, up until then, the Democrats were more or less the party of segregation. I mean, at least, you know, going back to the early part of the century. somebody like Martin Luther King actually started out as a Republican. Hard to believe now. And at the same time, LBJ launched the Great Society, he had Goldwater running as the Republican nominee, and he was an arch conservative. And I think it started to morph from there. I was looking at a chart that showed how Congress is divided ideologically. And, you know, back in the 60s and 70s, there was so much overlap between the two parties. And now it's like there's a gap in the middle. It's almost inconceivable. But yeah, there's been tremendous flip-flop since then.
I mean, I think another factor was that the Democrats began to be not only the party of civil rights, as you mentioned, but of women's lib.
The special interest groups, yeah.
And there were people like, you know, Bella Abzug, who was very colorful and flamboyant. And then again, you know, as you said, the Great Society, so the party of social programs. And so when I said the early 80s, what I really meant was that Reagan, for the first time, I think, convinced blue-collar voters to turn Republican in large numbers, which they hadn't done before. They'd begun to be kind of alienated from the Democratic Party. But I think for the first time, they really voted Republican, which to me seemed like kind of a con job that President Reagan successfully pulled off to convince the blue-collar masses of the country, right, to vote Republican, which had always been against their interests.
It's been accelerating ever since. Yeah, you're right about Reagan, that he did win over these former Democrats, you know, working-class white Americans who used to vote Democrat. And, the Republicans today, I mean, they use themes like, you know, patriotism, religion, gun rights, and all of that is designed to woo, you know, working class white voters into the party. And so now you have, you know, Trump's base, which is fundamentally reflects that kind of coalition of less fortunate people who feel threatened by what's going on in the country. They, you know, feel threatened by immigration and a number of other factors. But at the same time, you know, you have Trump blatantly favoring the business class, you know, cutting taxes on the rich, and yet he still wins the loyalty of these people. I mean, it's kind of touching in a way. I have so many liberal friends who just loathe that segment of society. And I think, you know, we need to reach out and understand them. I mean, they're us. They're Americans.
You're listening to American Variety Radio. I'm your host, Court Lewis. And we're talking with Rick Bayan, who's a proponent of moderation and a politics of being moderate. He has a website called newmoderate.com, which is the new moderate. Rick, let's talk about extremist thinking for a minute. I mean, what drives it? I mean, the internet kind of and the media really reinforce those two extremes, and it's sometimes called the echo chamber. What do you think kind of drives the two polar opposite extremes that we see so much, especially on the internet?
The problem comes with people listening only to opinions that reflect their own biases. Sure, it makes them feel comfortable. You know, if you're a liberal, it's nice to get your ideas reinforced by like-thinking people. And you know, same thing if you're a conservative. What's happening is that, it's an echo chamber. It's an amen corner. Whenever somebody espouses an extremist opinion, they get applause. And that sort of reinforces and even distorts their opinions to the point where they're being driven further left and further right than they would have been originally. And, I mean, you know, that's why we definitely need a strong, moderate platform, you know, to... Well, I don't know if I've had any influence over the extremists. I think we've been going further apart since I started the new moderate, unfortunately, but I still want to have that influence.
Well, I think, you know, the media obviously have a whole lot more influence than you do, and especially on the cable news channels, which are, you know, again, polarized, right? So they aid and abet this polarization.
Oh, absolutely. CNN, which I used to trust as, you know, more or less neutral network, has gone left. I mean, you know, they're essentially the Black Lives Matter network now, the anti-Trump network. I really can't find any fair and balanced, to use a familiar line, I really can't find any fair and balanced cable news stations.
I know. I mean, they wring their hands about this polarization, all of them, but it's good for ratings is what it boils down to. Each, you know, Fox News has their camp and CNN and MSNBC have theirs. And so, you know, they have a captive audience and they have to stick with that. It's a feedback loop and their audience expects them to feed back what the audience wants, right?
in the case of CNN, I think their ratings had been dropping, and they latched onto this, you know, left-leaning position to boost their ratings.
So what's been the prevailing view of moderates? I mean, I think they've kind of, you know, they're kind of viewed as weak and muddled and wishy-washy. I mean, you know, kind of elaborate on that if you would.
Yeah, that's the cross we have to bear, unfortunately. If only they knew a little more about us. Yeah, I mean, even in Congress, you know, moderates are regarded as pariahs. You know, they don't pass the purity tests of their own parties. You know, passionate liberals and conservatives just look at us as, you know, people who can't take a stand. And it's not true. I mean, we definitely, you know, we're not ideological. As far as I'm concerned, ideologies are for people who can't think for themselves. I like to think for myself. I like to be able to sort out the different ideas from both sides and see if I can understand both sides. And yeah, for me, that's the essence of being a moderate. You know, not all my positions are right down the middle, but at least I try and look at both sides of the story.
That's kind of a question I wanted to ask you. Do you think that maybe moderates are people who are more inclined to see both sides of an issue than the people on the other end are?
Yeah, I think that's, you know, one of our defining characteristics, that, yeah, people on the left and the right don't even bother to look at the other side. It's like, you know, they're looking at heretics, you know, that they just shun them.
Yeah, it's good and evil.
And, you know, I think, you know, both, I mean, okay, there are definitely wrong opinions on both sides. In fact, yeah, not only does a moderate look at both sides or try to understand both sides, but we also feel free to criticize both sides if we think they're wrong. At least criticize the ideas that we think are wrong. We try not to criticize them or, you know, as people, but we criticize their ideas.
You know, along that line, in college, I hated the radical left assertion that you'd hear sometimes, if you're not with us, you're against us. It's kind of like, if you're not one of us, then you're the enemy. And you can't, again, you can't be in the middle. You have to take a stand either hardline or one way or the other. And
tell me about it. Yeah. By the way, I went to college during the Vietnam War. Yeah, I mean, your options were siding with the crypto-Marxist anti-war people who really wanted a communist victory in Vietnam. You know, it wasn't anti-war so much as pro-communist. Or on the other side, yeah, the America love-it-or-leave-it types. And, yeah, of course, I was in no man's land right in the middle. And as one of my friends told me, he said, Rick, you wouldn't have it any other way. And she was probably right.
You know, it's funny, I've always seen the extreme left and the extreme right as being, personality-wise, as being two sides of the same coin.
Both sides can be militantly intolerant. I have some leftist friends. I mean, there's one of them I'm thinking of in particular is a young guy, still lives with his parents. And, I mean, he's ready to have all fascists or anybody he determines as a fascist, meaning conservatives, executed or sent to camps.
Yeah,
I mean, you know, how's that any different from being a neo-Nazi? Except it's, well, you know, it's they kind of meet around the back of the spectrum, if it is a spectrum anymore.
So it's kind of like the same drive, but a different flavor. And, you know, I looked on Wikipedia, says that Gallup polling has shown American voters identifying themselves as moderate between 35% to 38% of the time over the last 20 years. Now, that's a long span, and I'm sure it has changed a lot in those years. But do those numbers, generally speaking, a third or a little more than a third, do they jibe with what you think?
It's pretty close to the way it was, say, about 5 years ago. It used to be that I think the majority of Americans, when I say used to be, like, you know, maybe around the turn of the century, the majority of Americans considered themselves conservative, followed by moderates in the middle, like as I said, somewhere in the 30s, and then liberals were the smallest group. And I would say probably since Obama's time that the ranks of the moderates have been dropping, and we're probably seeing more people shifting over to the left. Yeah, we still have more conservatives than liberals, but I'd say moderates are a dwindling group, unfortunately.
Yeah, I saw another one in 2013, and again, that was a good while back now. A poll conducted by NBC News and Esquire magazine, oddly enough, found that 51% of Americans are what they define as moderate, and they consisted of this group, suburban women and moms, highly educated business people, socially conservative economic populace, and highly cynical young folks. And it said that the middle isn't defined by a lack of intensity. That's what we're saying. They have a very passionate position on a lot of things. They just don't conform to the contours of traditional liberalism and traditional conservatism. probably the general description there is probably still valid. I just don't know about their 51%.
The numbers, yeah, I'd be skeptical of that too. I think, yeah, as I said, it's been dropping. It's like we have two hills now on either side and a valley in the middle.
Yeah, yeah, it's a bimodal distribution, right, as a statistician would call it. So you remember back, as I do, in the 70s, the silent majority, which, you know, I think was more like older, generally conservative people, you know, the Archie Bunkers in a way, who supported the government and didn't really have a problem with the Vietnam War. And in other words, they were not anti-establishment. So the silent majority, they just weren't vocal. But it seems to me that today's moderates are actually more in the middle than that. They aren't really silent conservatives. They're more political centrists who can be, you know, in some ways conservative, in some ways liberal, and, you know, in many ways just reasonable. You know, is that sort of a generally valid kind of characterization?
We still do have a large silent group in the middle. I don't think I'd call them the majority anymore. Yeah, it reminds me of this line from the poet William Butler Yeats. He said, the best lack all conviction, while the worst are full of passionate intensity. That's kind of what we're seeing today. Mm-hmm. I mean, we do have vocal moderates, but they really can't be heard above the din coming from the right and the left, which is a shame.
Yeah, the black and the white are so much more more vivid than the gray, right? Than the gray.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's one of the key issues. I'm glad you raised that point. It's that it's so much easier to understand extremist opinions. You know, there's no subtlety. Whereas, you know, when you're a moderate, you're always looking at those shades of gray. And I mean, I wouldn't say it's above the majority of Americans. It's just more convenient to say, okay, well, this is where I stand. It's simple, and that's that. You know, I'm not going to think any more about it.
Yep, I can define what I think in 25 words or less, and that's a lot less effort than having to spend an hour defining where
sure.
you are. Where do you think that people who define themselves as political independents fit in?
I mean, I'm an independent. I'm not registered with either party, and, you know, kind of a double-edged sword because I can't vote in primary elections.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that's what determines a lot of, you know, where our politics go eventually. On the other hand, I'm glad that I feel free to vote for the individual I favor instead of just voting party line. I mean, I think that's kind of rigid. I imagine, you know, there are plenty of people who still do that. You know, they just, you know, like I have friends who say, vote blue, you know, and, you know, I mean, okay, it's fine in theory, but I'm not going to vote for some corrupt person just because, he has ideas, you know, because he's a Democrat or a Republican.
Yeah, I'm with you. I've always voted for the person I thought was best qualified for the job, and sometimes that's been a Republican, sometimes a Democrat, but it is an odd way to approach things in today's world. You know, I think one big problem, and you point this out on your website, is that there's no moderate political ideology. I mean, some of my opinions, as we were just saying, some of my opinions are conservative and some are liberal. And I imagine that's true of most people who think of themselves as moderate, wouldn't you say?
Well, as I said, ideologies are, I call them, like, they're the secondhand clothes of the intellectual world. For people who are either, you know, they're either too lazy to think for themselves or, you know, they just, you know, follow the path of least resistance. They, okay, I'm going to, you know, I'm going to subscribe to that ideology. Yeah, moderates, yeah, we don't have an ideology. I think it's a plus because then, like, for example, I mean, not all my ideas are right down the center. I'm a little bit left of center when it comes to the economy and finances. I think, you know, we're probably entering a second Gilded Age, which I think is dangerous. The middle class is eroding. We certainly don't want that to happen. And, you know, the government is just doing everything it can to benefit the rich. I'm a boat balancer there. I don't think we should go socialist, certainly, but, you know, I think we need to tip the boat back to the center. And same thing goes for cultural issues. I think we've gone way left on so many cultural issues. I mean, there are colleges today that teach courses on, you know, combating whiteness as if it's a disease. Hey, it's okay to be white, you know, as long as we don't lord it over everybody else. But yeah, I mean, it's just becoming acceptable now to bash white people, especially white males.
Yeah, that's right.
And so I think we need to balance the boat a little bit there, come back toward the center.
So is there a simple way that you could characterize a moderate political ideology, or is it just inherently gray?
Well, I think Teddy Roosevelt said it best. I mean, I love the way he used to put it. And it's funny, I've listened to recordings of his voice, and he said it like this. He said, "The principles for which we stand are the principles of fair play and a square deal for every man and every woman in the United States. A square deal politically, a square deal in matters social and industrial." And really, that sums it up for me. You know, be fair, be balanced, a square deal, you know, don't favor one group over any other group. You know, I mean, it seems so simple, and yet we just can't seem to get there.
We could use Teddy Roosevelt today, a modern version of him, without that accent. But that was a good that was a good rendition. I like that.
That's the way he spoke. Yeah.
Are there any moderate parties trying to gain traction today? I mean, I looked around on the web, and you could see them, but they look kind of moribund. I mean, you know, you never heard
yes.
of them.
You nailed it. And there are so many of them. That's part of the problem. It's that every moderate activist wants to have his own little kingdom and, you know, be in charge of it. I mean, there's some good groups out there. I mean, No Labels, which isn't really a party. It's, you know, they're just in favor of cooperation between Democrats and Republicans, and they're doing a good job. I looked online. There was a centrist party there. I don't know if they're still active. They haven't updated their site since more than a year ago. There's something called Moderate Voters. There's UniteAmerica.org. There's Uniters.org. So, I mean, you know, there are all these little organizations, but I don't know. Sometimes I think getting moderates together is like herding cats. Mm. You know, they don't want to. We're not collectivists. Mm-hmm. So
not joiners.
It's kind of hard to get us together.
So that is amazing, really, because, you know, you and I aren't the only people in today's world talking about the need to calm this vitriolic shouting match down and be more moderate, more like people were 20, 30 years ago in a way. And yet, with all the people who think that, there is no organizational push toward it. It's really an odd thing. You're listening to American Variety Radio. I'm your host, Court Lewis. We're doing an odd thing on American Variety and talking about politics, which I've never done before in any direct way. And we're talking with Rick Byan, who's the moderator of a website called The New Moderate. It's newmoderate.com. We're kind of getting toward the end of the show here, Rick. Let me list some issues, and you tell me, this is kind of like a, you know, 20 questions thing, although I don't have time for 20 questions, but you tell me which ones you think the majority of moderates, and of course, everything's a bell curve, right? So the majority, the middle of the bell curve of moderates would support. First, the death penalty.
Yeah, it's hard to speak for other moderates. I'd say, you know, a typical moderate would probably support it in extreme cases where you have incontrovertible evidence. You know, we certainly don't want any innocent people ending up on death row.
You know, abortion obviously is the third rail or whatever has been for a long time of American politics. But most people, I think, would agree that that late-term abortion is gross and is murder. And but the argument comes in first-term abortion. So what do you think most moderates, would they agree with first-term abortion?
I suppose it depends. You know, I suppose if they're religious, that would be a factor. I think, you know, most true Christians are anti-abortion. I see nothing drastically wrong with, you know, first trimester abortions. I take issue with the feminist argument that, well, it's our bodies and we can do whatever we want. Well, it's, you know, it's not their bodies. There's a body inside the body, so they have to think about that. That's my moderate input there.
Yeah. Now, again, I'm not talking about your opinion necessarily, although you may be kind of an avatar of moderates. But let me move along then. So, because we're talking about the majority, what you think from your experience is the majority of moderates.
As I said, I think, you know, religious moderates would probably be against any kind of abortion. Less religious moderates would probably say it's okay in the first trimester.
Okay. So how about the next one? Banning of military-style assault weapons.
Yes, definitely. I think the majority of Americans, you know, not just moderates, are in favor of banning military-style assault weapons. And not only the weapons, but the clips that go along with them.
The big magazines, yeah.
Because there are so many guns already in circulation. And now they're saying, you know, they're going to be having 3D-printed guns available. That's something we can look forward to, huh?
All right, let me move along. So we're getting short here. The immediate deportation of undocumented aliens.
Yeah, I'd say a moderate would probably put illegal immigrants into different categories. I'd say you know, if they're already here and they've been leading decent lives, I don't see the need to deport them. I say, you know, put them on a pathway to citizenship. I think most moderates would agree with that. And certainly don't break up families. On the other hand, I think a real moderate would be against these so-called sanctuary cities where, I mean, my gosh, you know, you have cities that are actually refusing to cooperate with ICE when it comes to harboring criminal illegal aliens. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't know what the reasoning is behind that, but yeah, I mean, that certainly doesn't sound very moderate to me.
About nationalized universal health care.
I'd say the typical moderate would say, no, we still need to support free market insurance. I think there's probably a middle ground, though, where, you know, we could have government insurance for people who aren't insured through their companies. I think that would be simple enough.
How about drilling and mining in national forests?
That is an emotional issue. I mean, it sounds awful. I'd say the average moderate would probably be against it. It's just we have to take into account that in some states out west, I mean, like at least like in Idaho, for example, I think half the land is public, you know, protected land. So I certainly wouldn't cut back on the amount of protected land. And personally, I'm against, you know, all this, you know, drilling in natural areas. Yeah, I'd say, you know, moderate would say just, you know, keep it reasonable. You know, don't go into, you know, public lands if you don't really have to.
Yeah, a lot of these answers are turning out to be subjective, gray area kind of things. Yes, in some cases and no in other cases. So here's another one. This may be more simple. How about waterboarding and other forms of what's called enhanced interrogation?
I'd say, you know, most decent people don't favor any kind of torture. Maybe if it actually worked and we could get information from these people, there'd be something to it. But I've seen no evidence that, you know, we've gotten any valuable information through this kind of torture. So, you know, speaking for other moderates, I'd say we'd be against it.
How about affirmative action in hiring and education?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. I think 50 years ago, we definitely needed it because, I mean, black people had been disadvantaged for so long. Women had never really been included in the workforce. Today, I mean, you know, it's a couple of generations later. The average moderate would, I've seen one promising trend that most moderates would be able to support, and that is affirmative action based not on race or gender, but on a combination of financial need and evidence that, you know, these people have been, you know, willing to push themselves and get ahead. Like, for example, up until now, I think a lot of, you know, rural white people have been completely shut out of the system. They, you know, they can't get in on their own merits, and there have been no affirmative action plans to help them. I'd say, yeah, something that acknowledges that, you know, poverty has been a kind of crippling factor and you have to, you know, give poor people, white or black, a step up. I think that would be fair.
All right. One last one. And you only have a few seconds to answer this. Mm-hmm. So nationally fully legalized marijuana.
That's the libertarians thing. I don't see the real harm. I've heard that marijuana isn't as soft a drug as it used to be. Just about every moderate would favor it for medicinal use, at least. Recreational use, we might be split.
Rick Byan, we're going to have to leave it there. We're out of time. It's been interesting, fascinating, really, and I appreciate you being on with us. Your website, again, is newmoderate.com. I want to thank all of you for listening. I hope you'll tune in again next week, same time, same place, for more American Variety Radio.